I am Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And joining us is Mr. Bob Pierce from NASA. Ready?
NASA.
Aeronautics vision of the future. Yes. They're coming up with new ways of flying.
That's good. We could use new ways of flying.
I was gonna say, so you've got a program to strengthen our arms. So when we flap...
we'll start working on that. That sounds like a good
idea.
Wait a minute.
The program I want to see is the one that makes commercial flying fun again.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's not their purview.
Yeah, I always say that if you walk through an airplane, I can point out all the things that have NASA heritage, but that... Where the seats are, that's not NASA. So that's
and that explains why it's so bad.
You prefer to fly empty airplanes. So what is it NASA's vision for the future of aeronautics?
Yeah, well, you know, as you know, sitting here at EAA, there's just a tremendous amount of innovation going on. So the things we're looking at is obviously a more sustainable future for aviation, and we're doing a lot there to bring technologies forward that can really change the efficiency of aircraft and the emissions and so forth. So we're really proud of the work we're doing there. We're also looking at the future of air traffic control. Work closely with the FAA on how things fly through our airspace. More things are flying, and then more different things are flying. So we need new tools and techniques to make sure we can manage the system safely. And then we're looking at new ways to move around, new modes of aviation. So high speed, can we get back to supersonic flight? Huge hurdles to do that in a way that would be acceptable, you know, from an environmental and obviously from a cost perspective and so forth. So we're working on some of those really hard problems on supersonic aircraft. And then finally, this eVTOL revolution that's coming. A lot of work needs to be done there to make sure that those operations are safe, that they can integrate into the airspace, that they're loaded and so forth. So we're working on a number of those issues. And then beyond that, just a lot of fundamental innovation. We have a lot of really smart researchers that are out there thinking about what's next from a materials or aerodynamics or propulsion perspective, and letting them, you know, try things out and see where that takes us.
Well, okay. You know, we're talking about aeronautics of the future. The problem we have is only so much sky, and we're getting all these new systems coming into play. You've got remote drones, you've got military drones. Now you're talking about these short-range eVTOL things.
Right.
Holy moly, it's going to be a crowded sky up there.
Yeah, well, that's why, you know, already with the small drones, we've developed what's called UTM, U.S. Traffic Management. We did that, sort of co-developed that with industry and the FAA. So now those systems are still fledgling. They're still, you know, the industry's out there.
They're growing.
They're growing, though. And right now we're working with industry and FAA on the Beyond Visual Line of Sight Challenge, right? So, as you know, you can go out there and operate as long as you can see the drone, that you can get waivers for some beyond visual line of sight, but we'd like to do it. We'd like to see it done by rule, right? So let's have a set of rules that say if you can satisfy these criteria and you can get certified to do beyond visual line of sight, then you can go out and do it. So we're working right now with them to do the hard technical work to make sure that that both there's a good rule out there, but that is a feasible one, right? That's the challenge, right? You want to make sure it's something you can satisfy.
And economically viable for the small drone operator.
Correct.
Yeah, you want it to be practical, you want it to be simple and easy to follow. Otherwise, people are going to look at it and say, eh, so what?
Yeah, we could build that right into this UAS traffic management type system. So as long as the drone is connected back down, and that's a relatively straightforward thing, then you can start to do strategic deconfliction of the trajectories. And so just make sure that when you put your plans in, you know, they remain well clear of any other drone and so forth. And so all those kinds of things are doable. And it doesn't really cost the drone operator anything. It's things you would build into the U.S. traffic management system itself.
Okay. Well, are you guys looking at taking ADS-B information and linking it to the drone so it knows when there's a conflict about to occur?
Well, that's sort of a really interesting challenge, right? So the drones themselves wouldn't necessarily be using ADS-B, but you would want to, because of general aviation and other things that are operating in the same airspace, you would want to make sure you know the entire airspace and what's going on. So there's no requirement for, you know, GA airplanes to be operating ADS-B. So we are looking at what are, you know, very low cost ways that would make it very, you know, very easy for GA pilots to, you know, to implement these kind of technologies and so forth so that we can have a fully safe airspace. But that's all work that needs to be done, and we'll be doing some analysis around what is the safety risk that's actually there? Is it something that's substantial or not? So we're looking at those.
I mean, in the case of a GA airplane, a cockpit strike by a 2-pound drone could be
pretty serious. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that we need to look at that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Good. There. Okay. Write that on your list and get started on
it. It's on the list. It was already on the list.
So what other? You talk about sustainability and reduction in carbon footprint.
Yeah.
It seems to me that, like, as far as internal combustions and jet engines are concerned, I would think that we're reaching the limit of what we can do. Is this the case, or am I, you know, just nuts?
Well, I don't know you well enough to know if you're nuts or not. But
trust us, we are.
Good response. Good answer.
But I would say that we're not at the limit of turbine engines yet. I mean, it's every time, every increment you have for efficiency, it gets harder. So the temperatures are going up, the pressures are going up, and so the inside of the turbine is not a very friendly place, and so the materials and so forth that you've got to operate in there becomes quite exotic. And things like durability are a big challenge and so forth. So we're working through those. But if we'll get the... In fact, right now we're working on getting the thermal efficiency up, which is where that the temperature pressure matter, right, when you're trying to extract as much energy from the fuel as you can. And that's what drives that. We're also trying to shrink the core down, the core of the engine. See, if you shrink the core down, then you can increase the bypass ratio without increasing the outer diameter of the fan. And that gets you propulsive efficiency. So between those, you know, I think you're looking at 15-20% more efficient turbine engines for the future. And then you can start to...
That's a huge jump.
It's a huge jump. And so when you look at what those machines look like, they are... there's some really innovative concepts like open rotor, so like don't have a nacelle on the outside. We've worked on that for years.
Well, isn't that called a propeller?
Well, it's built like a turbine, a fan.
Right.
But in many ways, yeah, you can think of it that way.
I always thought that duct improved efficiency, though.
It adds the challenge is as you get the nacelle larger, right, the drag on the nacelle goes up,
okay,
and so forth. So you'd really want to eliminate that, and then you get a lot of fuel efficiencies. The problem is there's noise issues. Mm-hmm. You know, we've largely solved the noise issues from having that open fan, and then there's safety things like if you throw a blade, that's the nacelle contained that, right?
Right. Well, most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time. So now the fuselage would have to contain it potentially. So there's some things you got to do with the fuselage. So it's an integrated challenge. But and then beyond the efficiency of the turbine, we can now start to hybridize it. So let's add electric power to it. And so right now we're looking at mild hybrid that might it will integrate maybe about a megawatt of electric power with the turbine. And these turbines are, you know, they could easily be 10, 15, 20 megawatts of installed power. So it's about, you know, maybe, you know, maybe about 10% of the power. But if you do it in an interesting, you know, sort of interesting ways, you can get another 5% of efficiency. So now you're looking at 20-25% potential efficiencies out of that. And then another, you know, with the vehicle, this X66 transonic truss brace wing could get you about 10% aerodynamic efficiency. So you're up in the... You know, between the best in class single aisle today to what a future single aisle aircraft could be, maybe 30-35%, you know, on the outside, that would be really a revolution.
That would be.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're involved with this at all, but I read that NASA just licensed a new high temperature alloy, strictly, I'm thinking, I guess, for turbine blades. Have you heard anything about that? You guys.
Yeah, it's called the GRX 810.
Right.
And yeah, it's a new alloy that was developed by researchers at Glenn Research Center. And it's compared to other super alloys, it's literally, some of the strength properties are, and this is for high temperature applications, literally off the charts. You'd have to put on a log scale to actually see the performance on one chart. So it's really amazing. And it's the result of a lot of experimentation, some computational materials work, and then it was all 3D printed. So it was really cool, and it's could be used for turbine blades, could be used for rocket engines, could be used for any really high temperature application where you need strength and lightweight. So it's absolutely fantastic.
Well, I know somebody's looking for just that. Anyway.
Well, it's not me. Don't look at me when you're talking about GRX 810.
I'm telling you, it sounds like something right out of Bugs Bunny. But anyway.
Yeah, really.
Vision of future. What about the cockpit itself? What do you envision changing in there?
Yeah, so, you know, there's been a lot of push, obviously, for the small folks, the eVTOLs. The only way that ultimately is economic at scale is you're going to have to make those pretty autonomous. That, you know, you certainly can't have two pilots up there, and probably for the long run, even one. You're going to want one pilot on the ground operating multiple eVTOL aircraft is probably the ultimate vision. So those are going to be highly automated. Even for the long-haul aircraft, more automation up there. Primarily, you know, the first thing we got to do is add, if we're going to add automation and autonomy to the flight deck for large aircraft, we want to do it such that it enhances safety, right? That's, the system is very safe. And a lot of that's because you've got expert pilots up there that can do a lot to manage through off-nominal situations and failures and so forth. So however we automate the future of these flight decks, we got to do it in a way that will make the system safer.
Okay.
Well, you know, you talk about automating the flight deck with making it autonomous, and I keep thinking of the self-driving Teslas and some of the problems they've had with those.
Yeah, the Teslas don't recognize airplanes.
No, but I wouldn't want to be on an autonomous aircraft where the system isn't fully tried and tested.
Sure. I'm not sure I want to be on a remotely piloted aircraft. I want him right there with
same issues. He's got to have skin in the game.
That's right. All right, we've been talking with Bob Pierce from NASA, and this is Digital Dave.
I'm Fast Eddie, and this is EAA Radio.